When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast. And yeah, the mood is... The mood is very consistent right now amongst fans. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. I'm terribly depressed about this whole thing. So hopeful coming into the season, only to have to face the reality of this being an average to below average football team. I got a text from a buddy of mine who says, This loss is impacting me in a really negative way. I usually watch the game a few times. I can't bear to watch this game twice. It was horrible in so many ways. For me, in the, 10 hours since this game ended, Seth, to me, The part that I hate is reconsuming all of the highlights. And normally, with the Texans over the last year and a half, it's been really fun to listen to what national people are saying about them because they've kind of been, a version of America's darling because of how quickly they turn things around. Everybody loves C.J. Stroud. Everybody loves D'Amico Ryans. Rightfully so. They are a punchline today, in my opinion. They got kicked in the mouth last night by the previous punchline in the NFL, the New York Jets, and they now hold the title at least for the next couple of days over the weekend of punchline right now because the Jets beat them last night.
I think that, and in a lot of ways too, if you you talk about what expectations were headed into the season, how things looked, I think you can draw a lot of parallels to the Detroit Lions with the Texans, and we already have been able to as a team that was extreme laggards. They got a couple things right, and all of a sudden things kind of switched for them. But for the Lions, in that second year where people were optimistic about them, it was kind of dicey early on. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they did, the Lions had made a couple pretty bold moves over the course of a couple seasons. They changed play calling duties offensively. They fired a defensive backs coach. Like, they made in-season changes on both the offensive and defensive coaching side of things that made measurable or noticeable differences on the outcome.
Yep.
And I'll go back to the Bills last year. The Bills fired offensive coordinator two-thirds of the way through the season, and it ended up being better for the Bills. They ended up being a better offense. That's where the Texans are approaching. That's the territory they're heading towards right now. There's no excuse. We went into last night saying, wow, the Jets are really not playing up to the caliber of their depth chart. You look at the names on that team, and they're not living up to it. The Texans are 100% that team right now.
Yep.
You look at the depth chart, they are not performing up to it. All eyes go to the offensive coordinator. Because, yes, the offensive line is an issue, but it's across the board. It's play design and play calls. It's everything is substandard right now on the offense.
And in a weird way, the schedule lays out for you right now very conducively to make changes like that. You got a few extra days to acclimate to whatever those changes may be. If you're doing something with the play calling, if you're doing something with the offensive coordinator, like you just said the Lions did, this gives you a few extra days to whoever it might be, I'm assuming somebody in the building, to acclimate themselves to it. You got a few extra days to do that here because you played on Thursday, not Sunday. That matters. As long as you're in season, it matters. That's a few extra days to get ready for that very Lions team, ironically, who might be the best team in football right now. Here's D'Amico Ryans last night. The pressure on C.J. Stroud from opposing defenses is the topic right now. It is a crisis right now for the Texans that this offensive line is playing so poorly, getting C.J. Stroud so physically damaged, and I think a little bit psychologically damaged as well. How sustainable are things with C.J. under this much pressure?
As many times you get sacked that many times is not good enough, right? Don't want our quarterback getting hit. As many hits as we took is not good enough, and you know, we got to make things adjust. We got to adjust. We got to change things moving forward.
And this isn't like it's a little below expectation. I'm talking about this particular area, the offensive line and their inability to protect C.J. Stroud. It's not like there was the expectation that this was going to be a top five offensive line, and it turns out they're middle of the pack. They are really, really bad. Like, they are, in some ways, historically bad in the amount of pressure that they're allowing the future of your franchise to get hit by here in the face.
Yeah.
Like, it's
yeah.
really bad. Like, we're not, this isn't shock jocks on the radio trying to get somebody fired. Like, these are the types of things, as you just pointed out, Seth. Things like this for a team with expectations where the downside is not just losing football games, it's losing your franchise quarterback for this year and maybe future years. Who knows if he gets damaged badly enough. These are the type of things that necessitate that sort of change.
Yeah.
This is not alarmist by us here.
Somebody fact check me on the chronology of when Ben Johnson gained play calling duties. Thank you. I think this is the thing I would bring up, because a lot of people have very justifiably said, okay, is it going to happen to CJ what happened to David Carr, where it seemed like he got hit so much in the first few years that it permanently destroyed the clock in his head? I don't worry about that to that degree, because the difference between CJ and David is that David in his first couple years, I don't think ever really had the chance to develop that pocket presence. And now maybe he never would have anyway, but I'm not sure that he really had the chance to. CJ has already demonstrated an ability to avoid pressure, to navigate pressure, to keep his eyes downfield, to understand all that. How to avoid? I'm just looking at one of the advanced charts here of quarterbacks and how good they are after avoiding a sack. CJ's one of the top seven in the league. I think he's got a very good pocket presence for a young quarterback. I think that can take a hit and that can get challenged, but I don't think he's anywhere near the potential to be all of a sudden David Carr.
Yeah.
It's just he's a different quarterback than David Carr was.
Here's the chronology for Ben Johnson. This was in Dan Campbell's first year.
Yeah.
And Anthony Lynn was the play caller there, the former head coach of the San Diego Chargers. And they started out 0-8. This is in Campbell's first year in 2021. They were 0-8. So it's a little more, you know, like, it's the records are very different here, but the thought process is the same, where Dan Campbell said, look, 0-8, this isn't good enough. And so they gave play calling duties to Ben Johnson and then named him the offensive coordinator in February of that year. They went 3-14 or something like that in that season.
Yeah.
That Ben Johnson got the play calling duties. But it was one of those 3-14, a little like Jonathan Gannon and
they became a darling, by the end of that season.
Having won only 3 or 4 games. That's what led to them get that record, got them Aiden Hutchinson.
And I'm sorry, what week was it that Ben Johnson got play calling duties?
0-8 start. It was halfway through the season.
Yeah, halfway through the season.
Yeah.
They changed play callers.
Yep.
And it made a difference.
And then
it was the next season where they fired a defensive backs coach, I believe. I think it was the next season.
Okay.
And that made a difference in season.
Yep.
Now they're one of the best defenses in the NFL with Aaron Glenn as their coordinator. Aaron Glenn's not getting nearly as much buzz about being a future head coach as Bobby Slowick was last year.
Correct.
But Aaron Glenn has done something more impressive, which is over the course of several seasons has gone from being a laggard defense to now one of the better defenses in the NFL. And they're doing it right now without the benefit of their best pass rusher, too.
I think the question for Texan fans, and I don't know the answer to it, we're going to find out, does D'Amico Ryans have that in him? Does he have it in him to make a major change with this coaching staff in a situation that begs for major change?
This is the test, too, for the coaches who are super positive. Like, it's good to always, anticipate getting the best and expect the best and expect guys to get a result. But the cold, hard reality is that you're also in a business where there's a lot of turnover. And they do it with the players, right? No problem. Yeah, we cut players all the time.
All the time.
D'Amico's an awesome guy who wants to be positive all the time. But it's a reality of the business that you got to cut players all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you can't sit around waiting for the 53 guys you have on your roster to all of a sudden get good at some point. At some point, you got to let go of Kenyon Green before his shoulder makes the decision for you. Likewise with coaches, at some point, you got to make the decision. Are these guys actually getting the most out of what we have out there on the field?
Yeah. Here's my thing about firing. Let's say Chris Strausser is the collateral damage in all this.
Yeah.
It's his position group that is playing so abysmally right now and is putting C.J. Stroud in danger literally every time he drops back to pass. This is my concern here is that, okay, who's the replacement? Is there a replacement out there? Like, literally, is Chris Strausser not good at coaching these guys? Or is this not a group that's good at accepting the coaching or is a little too casual about everything? Because if Strausser is actually a good coach, then you're doing it because you're just trying to jolt those guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know that these guys have personalities that are joltable right now. You know, like, are these guys that are going to take it to heart that they just got their, if it were to happen, that they just got their position coach fired? Or, you know, are they shopping for the next set of skinny jeans?
Right, are they going to come in and, yeah, do they even want to, you know, usually if you've got the right kind of guys, what you really need at every position is a really good teacher.
Yeah.
Like, coaching is teaching, as multiple great coaches will tell you.
Yep.
But a lot of that is also having the right kinds of guys that really want to be teached and or be taught and to just actually make changes from week to week and improve. So that's a big question mark. And there's only so much you can do about that in season. I do think two things about the offensive line. One is that, look, there's times where they're exposed in pass protection, especially when the tight ends and running backs get involved, because the O-line is turning, you know, Laramie's turning to help out, to help out Kenyon Green.
Yeah.
They're using turn protection. And then that puts more stress on tight ends to block defensive ends, etc. So there's that. The other is that, okay, and I was guilty of this early in the season. I would think, okay, bringing an offensive lineman in via trade is kind of dicey because the offensive line is so technique and scheme dependent, and you got this continuity along the offensive line. And now I'm looking at myself saying that thing at any point in my life and asking, what continuity are you going to disrupt?
Your tweet.
Oh, this five-fingered glove that works in unison. I said on my stream last night, no, this is, Sean, I grew up, I come from a farming family. Multiple men in my family don't have all of their digits or their fingers. This offensive line looks like they shoved their hand into a hay elevator and had it mangled in the gears. No veteran offensive lineman who comes into this group right now is going to somehow destroy this fine-tuned machine that they have working.
Yeah.
This Swiss timepiece. Yeah. Don't worry about it. You bring in a guy with a freaking pulse. Or Jared Patterson if he ends up being the savior. Because the left guard position is, it's above and beyond just the damage that Kenyon Green is doing individually. It's, I think, some of the protections they have to call. I mean, you go against good defensive backs like the Jets have, and you say, okay, well, we're going to have to just start getting CJ out of the pocket, rolling him. And, like, defenses have answers for that.
Yeah.
And it turns into half-field reads. Guys are all covered up. CJ doesn't have anywhere to go with the football.
Yep.
Except here and there, every now and then, a 50-yarder to Tank Dell.
All caps on the 5-Hour Energy fan line. We have so much invested in the O-line, I have no idea how to fix the situation. For purposes of 2024, it is kind of a helpless situation. I can tell you, having done the research, it is a situation that you can, with some pain, extricate yourself from or make changes to much easier. Not much easier, but after the season. Like, after this season, at the very least, Laramie and Titus, you're not upside down on moving on from them. Like, their cap hits like 20, you know, Laramie is like, cap hits like 28, but if you move on from him, it's 25. So you kind of save $3 million. I mean, you're still having to spend $25 million in dead money on a guy who wouldn't be here if you were to trade him or whatever you do. I don't know what the short-term solution is, and I don't know what the long-term solution is.
Their whole operation, man, there's just, my God, these guys just let themselves get pushed around so much.
Yeah.
They just, that's why it was such a breath of fresh air to see Kendrick Green, even though he's got limitations, you know, like, man, it's just glaring how small he is, but he plays his ass off to make up for it. And it's the first time really all season long where I've watched an offensive lineman and say, oh, that guy's playing his ass off. You know?
Yep.
Wow. That guy's really, really playing his ass off. Instead of, you know, Kendrick Green got initially beat on a tackle end stunt, but he lunged out like a feral cat to at least get a piece of the looping tight end, and yeah. CJ was able to step up, as opposed to standing around after they get beat with a dopey-ass look on their face, yeah. with that bad, they've got that fat offensive line body posture where they stand like Chris from The Family Guy, yeah. right? Kind of like with their shoulders forward and their bellies hanging out.
Yep.
Like, oh, look at CJ, he's getting hit. I wonder why. Hey, I know that guy tackling CJ. I know that guy. That's my guy.
Hey.
I wonder if I should go and help CJ up. I don't know. Coach tells us we got to get in the huddle quickly.
Oh, my God.
I just can't win. I can't win. They're a combination of Eeyore and Chris from The Family Guy.
That's not a compliment.
At best.
Yeah. At best,
yeah.
They're
a castrated version of Eeyore. Eeyore with no testicles. That's the body language of your standard Texans offensive
lineman.
They're
a bunch of castrated donkeys. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Fake donkeys, like stuffed donkeys.
Look over there. The Green Bay guys are shoving CJ around on the sideline. Ooh. That's not cool at all.
Hi, CJ.
Did you enjoy your trip to the Packers sideline?
Okay, now the 5-hour energy fan line is just turning into this sea of names of damaged quarterbacks. That CJ, yeah. CJ Stroud looking like Mac Jones out there. Oh, don't do that.
Oh, Mac Jones the rookie of the year?
He was a rookie.
What a
of
great
the
year that was for Mac Jones.
2021, yeah. 2022, not so much. Sean and Seth,
we're going to get a report in the off season that CJ's been calling, or we'll get a report in season that CJ's been calling Ryan Day looking for answers.
Oh,
so remember
like
that
Mac
was
Jones?
The deal Mac Jones had called, what, Bill O'Brien?
I think
or
Bill
was
O'Brien,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and Belichick got all pissy about it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be CJ. Turns out CJ was talking to, during the bye week, CJ spent 3 days with Ryan Day.
It's going to piss off D'Amico and Bobby. Hey, speaking of, okay, we got to talk about this in the next segment because I'm not sure if you've seen it yet, so I got to give you the break to see it if you haven't. Did you see D'Amico after the game down on the field with what people perceive to be a cold shoulder?
Yeah, to Aaron Rodgers,
yeah.
right? I think they had already acknowledged each other, and I think it was at that point where they were kind of looking for somebody else. I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be a still frame that
okay.
looks bad.
I'm going to retweet it, and then we can discuss it. I want to look at it. I'm going to look at it again. There's a nice okay. conspiracy theory going on as to why, if he did cold shoulder him, as to why D'Amico did it, and I want to see if this holds water for you. Yeah,
okay.
yeah. So, well, the conspiracy theory on why D'Amico Ryans may have cold-shouldered Aaron. D'Amico seems like the last guy who would cold-shoulder anybody. So we don't know if he did or he didn't.
I'm fascinated
but
by this.
The conspiracy theory as to why D'Amico Ryans may have cold-shouldered Aaron Rodgers on the field after the game. We've got that coming up now.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln of Sugarland. On the Southwest Freeway, exit Kirkwood and take the first U-turn at West Airport under the giant American flag. It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Right, so one of the more noteworthy parts of the broadcast last night was after the game where all the players are milling around on the field and the coaches are milling around on the field. And D'Amico Ryans is kind of making his rounds. And it would stand to reason he would know some of the guys on the staff with the Jets because of the, you know, the 6 degrees of separation thing with Robert Saleh, you know, D'Amico and Robert Saleh on this Kyle Shanahan staff in San Francisco. D'Amico was a linebackers coach on Saleh's defensive staff when Saleh was the DC. So the camera was down there for a lot of the milling around down there. CJ and Aaron Rodgers coming together like the quarterbacks always do, giving each other a little bro hug. And D'Amico Ryans walks past Aaron Rodgers one time, starts to go talk and shake hands with some of the coaches on the Jets staff. Aaron Rodgers is kind of just standing there behind D'Amico, so D'Amico doesn't see him. D'Amico turns around and is sort of almost face-to-face with Aaron Rodgers for a moment there.
Yeah.
And just keeps walking, doesn't shake hands, doesn't really do anything right there.
Yeah, and Rodgers was kind of trailing him the whole time, but it didn't look like Rodgers was going to reach out to acknowledge D'Amico at all either. They were kind of just, I don't want to say avoiding each other, but definitely not acknowledging each other. The first time I saw it on TV, I thought, like, wow, boy, that looks like something people could make something out of, but it doesn't seem. The more I watch it, there's no way CJ didn't, or D'Amico. Yeah, D'Amico looked right at Aaron Rodgers.
And almost and then, paused for a second. Didn't stop, but slowed a little bit and kept walking.
Yeah. Okay, what's the theory?
This is a conspiracy theory. I'll credit Patrick Storm with this. He's the first one I saw put this out there this morning. And he retweeted the video that you just described. And, I mean, there absolutely is a moment there where it looks like a snub. And Patrick Storm says, oh, Robert Sala told him what really happened, and D'Amico is standing on business. In other words, you got my friend fired.
Oh. That's a good theory.
Yeah.
That's a really good theory.
Yes.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. That would be suitable shade. This guy right here. The only thing I thought was, I'm looking at it again, depending which still frame, the camera for NFL films was already trained in on Aaron.
Yeah.
And Aaron was talking to a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one point where D'Amico kind of looks like that look where you're like, oh, you realize you're in a picture and you don't mean to be, so you kind of stand up and go like this.
Yeah.
If you grab that still frame, it looks like he's trying to stay out of the camera shot.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's it. That's the only other alternate explanation I could have other than that D'Amico is giving him the cold shoulder on behalf of Robert Saleh. I don't know.
Does D'Amico have a cold shoulder in him towards somebody? Is D'Amico petty? Is he petty? Would he be petty cast someday?
Would it be petty if it were just, you know, basically just steering clear of a sociopath? I don't think that's petty.
Maybe that's not even petty at that point. You're just trying to be safe at that point. You're trying to steer clear of a sociopath. But, I mean, because D'Amico knows the cameras are down there, man. Like, he's been on several post-game fields before.
He would have, as he turns from his right with Aaron Rodgers standing to his left, Aaron Rodgers is talking to an NFL reporter of some sort. There's an NFL Films camera trained on Aaron Rodgers. And D'Amico would have been able to see the sound boom and the cameraman, I'm guessing, as he turns. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know. There's definitely there's nothing from this video that tells me, like, gives me any reason to say that there definitely wasn't something there.
Right.
That there definitely wasn't. I can't say there definitely wasn't a snub, and that, like, so many videos these days, you know, like, all right, well, can I see it from the beginning?
Yeah.
I mean, they start following D'Amico as he's on his way out to the field. I don't think there was an opportunity to see or talk to Aaron Rodgers before the snubbing began. Yeah, this may have been a snub.
I like it. Yeah, I hope it is. You know what? I'll respect D'Amico more if it's a snub. Honestly, I already respect D'Amico Ryans tremendously. I'll respect him even more if he snubbed Aaron Rodgers on the field. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Morning, boys. Worst 6-3 team in the league. All right, well, I think they're the only 6-3 team in the league, but I get what you're saying. Right now, there will be more after this weekend. Shows that it's all luck so far. Why won't the OC open up the playbook to longer passes? All right, we'll put the OC question aside for a second. We've batted Bobby Slowick around plenty here over the last couple segments. What is this team right now? Like, what are the expectations for a team, Seth, that has spent the better part of the last month and a half in the top 5 or 6 of everybody's power rankings? And I think a lot of that is because the people that do these power rankings don't watch every snap of every game and the game flow with the Texans, and maybe aren't in tune with the fact that they protect CJ Stroud abysmally. they don't score in the second half of football games. They've allowed teams to stay in the games with just silly mistakes. This is a sloppy team, by and large. They are a sloppy 6-3 team, and now everybody's seeing it on national television last night.
So the Texans right now, and you know, this is something that we've been pointing out pretty regularly, that all right, it's not like their scoring margin is all that great. We've been saying they've been playing like a 500 team.
Yep.
So there's lots of 500 teams that are right around, like the Seahawks are +5 in the scoring margin.
Yeah.
You look at the Falcons are 5-3 and they're +1 in scoring margin. Right now the Texans are 6-3. But they're +1. They're a 500 football team, much like many of the other 4-4 teams in the league, or like the 5-3 Falcons. Right. They've been too high in some of the power rankings based on the way some of their games have gone against good opponents.
Well,
they've got a nice win versus the Bills, but that was with the Bills without their best receiver at the time and before Amari Cooper. They're not the same team as the Bills.
They're not. And I get what you're doing with the comps to some of those other teams right there. I think for purposes of what we were all hoping the Texans would be this year, and again, to the point of where I think some national pundits think they are, but they may not be. The teams that they are around the same part of the standings in the AFC right now, the Bills are 6-2, and their scoring differential is +84.
Is that more than one? I'm not a mathematician, Sean.
It's 84 times the amount that +1 is, yes.
They're 8,400% better than the Texans?
Something like that, yes, yes.
Or is that 840%? They're 840%? No, it's 8,400%.
It's a lot of zeros. The Steelers are 6-2, like the Texans were this time yesterday. They are +68, and that's with mediocre quarterback play for most of the year. They're +68. The Baltimore Ravens, who are 5-3 and play the Texans on Christmas Day, they're +33, and that's at 5-3 right now. The Texans are +1. So, yeah, like this is – man, I get all the celebrating. Hey, a win's a win, and if you win by 3 and you win by 20, it's the same thing. And it is. In the standings, it's the same thing. But in terms of what your team is capable of accomplishing or what I care to predict they're capable of accomplishing, like am I backing you right now with a Super Bowl bet at +1 scoring differential on a 6-3 team? Hell no, I'm not right now. No.
No.
Yeah, I can't do it, man.
The one thing that you can't look past is that, as we've said all year long, you don't need the advanced stats to tell you that they're a middling offense. They entered this week as the 14th scoring offense in the NFL. And yes, that was a good chunk without Nico Collins, but you still had Stephon Diggs. You still had Tank Dell, who last night showed that he's still very much a viable wide receiver. With Joe Mixon having multiple 100-yard games, but he missed a little bit of time. But this is this game last night versus the Jets. I'm glad they had this versus the Jets, at least, if they had to get a really, really bad loss out of the way, because it was against a team that had won two games, against a team that had looked lost and disheveled last week. Not even last week. This week. This week. Yeah. By the normal calendar.
They lost to the Patriots.
The first day of the week is Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I know it's a different NFL week, but it was 4 days prior.
Yeah.
They looked like they couldn't get out of their own way.
Yep.
And they came out, and in the second half especially, the Jets offense was surgical against you. In the second half, the Jets defense did everything that you would expect from looking at their depth chart, but which they hadn't been doing previously. It was just a complete dismantling. So you can spare me they don't have Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs. Lots of teams don't have Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs, and those teams have put up better performances versus the freaking Jets.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. I would have accepted that versus the Lions.
Right.
But not against the Jets. Not against Aaron Rodgers, who had looked like the worst version of himself that we have ever seen since maybe the first year that he started. I'm not in any mood for that.
It was his worst half as a pro in the first half of that game. Like, threw for 32 yards, I want to say. I got it right here. Aaron Rodgers
35,
at the half,
I believe.
It was 32. Okay. I'm looking at it. He was 7 of 14 for 32 yards in the first half of the game yesterday. So, yeah, it was – look, right now, until we see otherwise with this offensive line, this Texans team is a version of what previous Texans teams have been at their peak, which is they're good enough to win the AFC South. They probably will win the AFC South. They still have three very, very winnable games inside the division, and they've got a couple other games on the schedule that are there for the taking if they play their A game. But the ceiling for this team right now, until we see the offensive line do otherwise, or until we see some substantive change with who's coaching the offensive line or who's calling plays or something, or see C.J. Stroud get back to normal, then this team is just a different version of the Bill O'Brien teams that won the division, the Gary Kubiak teams that won the division, were good enough to win a home playoff game, and then just bad enough to go get their teeth kicked in the second round of the playoffs, just like they were last season.
You know, and I think a lot of it, too, is when you look at some of the near wins early in the season or the loss versus the Packers, which, hey, you could call that a quality loss or whatever you want on the road. I don't know. Then they just got completely destroyed by the Vikings. Like, even the wins were marred by the thing that would come to roost last night, which is, oh, wow, you should have won by more. But, yeah, you keep shooting yourself in the foot.
Right.
Or you're just not playing well in crunch moments or what have you. This is more discouraging because they continue to do all those stupid things, but then they also just got physically destroyed in the second half. There's no Titus Howard saying that they know they're the better team and they let this one slip away. What part of 30 minutes of football feels like slipping away to you? Not to mention, I'll say going into the first half for the offense, you said the Jets gift you a 7-point swing. They drop the ball, a rookie running back drops the ball 3 centimeters before the goal line. And you don't come out of that half with anything more than a one score margin. And then you do nothing in the second half. For 3 games in a row, the offense hasn't scored a single touchdown in the second half. Again, plenty of teams in the league don't have Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs, but have managed to score a touchdown in the second half.
Yep.
You know, like, it's not a high bar we're even measuring them up. That's not even Super Bowl contender stuff we're talking. Can you score a touchdown without Nico Collins? Right. Turns out, no. Yeah.
Not in the second half, you can't. Not in the second half. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a football Friday. As you can tell, it's been a little salty today, and I think rightfully so. And we'll continue to plow through your texts here. A lot of concern for C.J. Stroud, a lot of concern about what exactly this team is, a lot of concern that I think there's a lot of fans that feel trapped right now by this offensive line, like, oh man, this is who we're stuck with. So with that said, trade deadline is coming up next Tuesday. Who are you calling? What does the shopping list look like? And where are the priorities for Nick Caserio? This is a big 4 or 5 days coming up for the Texans GM, and we'll discuss that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Trade deadline coming up on Tuesday next week. Tuesday, middle of the afternoon, I want to say 3 o'clock local time. I'd be shocked if the Texans didn't make any moves before the trade deadline. I would be very, very surprised. And I'm not saying it's left guard, which I know if we were to put up a poll. And in fact, we may need to do that. Seth, you kind of informally polled your social media audience before we had Nick on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it seemed like defensive back was sort of an overwhelming reply to that.
Yeah.
Should I put up a more formal poll as to what people want for the trade deadline, do you think?
Yeah, and I think right now it's going to end up being left guard more so than defensive back, which is going to be ironic because last night, I mean, the death blow by the Jets was when Jalen Petrie was manned up on Devontae freaking Adams, which was the nightmare scenario that I kept warning you about, Sean, was that, man, okay, Petrie he's good as a nickel linebacker, but he's not a cornerback.
Right.
Never was a cornerback in the NFL. If you call him your slot corner, you are putting a safety/linebacker in the slot versus Devontae Adams and expecting him to go man. And that wasn't a cover zero blitz or anything. That was just good old school, single high safety. And you've got a 5-man pass rush and Jalen Petrie's going to be manned up on Devontae Adams. What do you expect? I mean, this is that's the nightmare scenario that I've been terrified about ever since they started this experiment with him in training camp. And we could see in training camp that when Jalen Petrie was lining up in the slot against Tank Dell or Stephon Diggs or Nico Collins, he couldn't hack it.
It was ugly. Yeah.
So, yeah, you need more guys. Right now, you've got two safeties as your basically the guys that you're charging with playing man in for vast portions. And it was nice when you're in the minor leagues. It was nice when you were going against the Bills' depleted wide receiving core. It's nice versus the Patriots or teams like that. I would even throw the Packers out there in terms of their top-end receiving talent isn't nearly what the not what the Jets have.
Yeah.
But it's gonna bite you.
Yeah.
It's gonna bite you, and it's gonna embarrass you on nationally streamed television. That's
yes.
Right. Nationally streamed.
Nationally streamed.
Maybe embarrassed in front of the entire internet and local television.
The web. So trade deadline coming up on Tuesday. And we already know who some of the teams are that are open for business. Two of them are in your division. I don't know, you know, I don't know what the stomach is for GMs with the whole trading inside the division thing is these days. I'm not sure. But Tennessee,
it's an individual thing.
I mean, Tennessee traded DeAndre Hopkins. Jacksonville traded Cam Robinson for day three picks. So they're both clearly open for business, right?
You know, look. I think Caserio comes from New England. Belichick was never bashful about trading within the division, and other than the Jets, who he just despises, but they would make trades within the division. I don't know. There's a relationship there with the GM in Tennessee, and Tennessee is obviously very much in a reset year. So I think maybe perhaps something like that could happen. But there's a wide array of possibilities.
I am gonna put as the four choices on this Pender poll that I'll put up during the break here. I'm gonna put guard. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna put wide receiver.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put defensive back.
Okay.
And then I'll put other. Okay. And if it's other, then have them reply. Because you can only do
have
four
them reply,
choices.
Too. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. If it's other, then
I notice these people that are super online with their social media, they love that engagement rate. That's what you got to go for that.
I got to go for the engagement rate. Hey, what did you think of my appearance on the opening credits last night?
It was everything we expected it to be, which was awesome but brief. It basically sounded like the debriefing that I give Brandy after any one of our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, was it really? It just seemed like I just, so we're done.
Right.
And I'm like, yep. And it was incredible.
And then
because you were on screen for all of about like 1.5 seconds, right? But you looked good.
Thanks.
The camera, I mean, they got those high powered NFL films cameras up in your face.
Right
up
in my
you looked
face.
Good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
But it was like 1.5 seconds.
It wasn't long. Yeah,
and I knew at that moment that the Texans were going to win by at least four touchdowns.
Yeah, you kind of set me up there. You're like, Texans by 50. Sean made the opening credits, and I'm like, oh, boy.
I've already blamed you this morning.
I know.
Called you a diva.
You're not alone. Yeah.
Trying to get your 1.5 seconds of screen time.
Oh, yeah. No,
the amount of money they put into these things. You guys got to understand, NFL Films was in there with us for an hour. They got three workers. And they were in studio for a half hour, but they had to be there before the show and then breaking down and everything, travel to it and everything. And they did that for all of 1.5 seconds of screen time.
It's incredible.
For the intro.
It is the level of meticulousness that goes into it. Part of me is like, okay, is that a good use of resources there? You know,
they should hire whoever organizes all of that, because so much of these productions. It takes the interviews that they're doing during training camp. They're kind of cataloging them and getting them ready for a production and everything.
Right.
You know, we could tell at training camp a couple times there were producers from national broadcasts that were there just to ask questions that day that they can use in Sunday Night Football or what have you. They should have that person coach the offensive line.
Oh.
That's an attention to detail.
Is it ever, dude?
That, frankly, seems to be lacking around these parts.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, that would be... That would be amazing. They fire Chris Strauser, but they hire that Chris that was here filming us the other morning for NFL. Mm-hmm. Now, he was actually in the NFL. Chris, the guy filming us, he was a wide receiver for the Chiefs back in the day. Chris Wilson.
He was a wide receiver?
He was a wide receiver,
He's a big wide receiver. He's not a fat guy. He's a big guy.
No, he's big. He's kind of thick.
Yeah.
He's kind of muscular.
I was going to ask if he was a defensive end or something.
He played at the University of Pittsburgh with Larry Fitzgerald back in the early 2000s. Yeah.
Taught him everything he knows.
That's what he told us. Yeah, no, he didn't say that.
No, he didn't say that.
He definitely didn't say that.
So that was the fun part of last night.
Yeah.
And then it was fun for a little while. It was fun when Malachi Corley dropped the football.
Yeah, when did it stop being fun for you last night?
Like, I mean, it was never fun. Even after Malachi Corley.
Yeah.
Because you know what the problem was? Three guys on defense got collapsed for Malachi Corley to run in and stop himself at the goal line.
There were,
you know,
yes. No,
we owe more to Sir Isaac Newton, and before Sir Isaac Newton, gravity didn't exist. It was a mess everywhere. But then he invented gravity, and then it allowed that ball to fall to the turf. Thank you, Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah,
sir. Thank you.
Everybody's floating around in space, and Sir Isaac Newton grabs an apple and he like drops it and like, oh,
he
and
said, yeah, "I'm going to invent gravity."
Yeah,
and someday Malachi Corley. Great name, by the way. We'll gift the Texans 7 points.
Thanks to gravity.
That was a 7-point swing right there.
Yep.
And he did us the honor of letting it roll out of the end zone to be sure it was a touchback. Yes.
The reason I asked you when did that game stop becoming fun for you last night is because that game was never fun for me last night.
Yeah.
There were so many points in that game. And there's something about that stadium that makes it less fun because you're nervous every play that one of your guys is going to get hurt. But I looked over to, you know, our boss was up there. We were watching the game up here in the live lounge. And our boss was up here. A few other T-Mill was up here. And there were so many times I looked at them and I said, I am not enjoying this. Even when the Texans were winning, I'm like, I just want to get the hell out of here with a win. I am not enjoying this right now.
No. The very beginning of that game was everything that Thursday Night Football has come to promise you and that you can expect. It looked so much like the Jets were playing the worst version of the Jets and that this was going to be a battle of which team can avoid the most catastrophes.
Right.
It really was. It was narrowly averted catastrophes left and right at the beginning, and that's what kept the game close. And yet, so what I expected in the second half if the Texans lost that game would be that there would be a couple of really weird occurrences because there were recipes for it. Kadar Holman, for God knows what reason, as the punt returner or as a blocker, was like still trying to block a guy that was going to touch the ball down and came precariously close to touching it with his leg or something.
Yeah.
That would have been an all-time idiotic move if that had turned into a touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the hell he was doing back there. So there's that. But no, it ended up just being an absolute drubbing in the second half. The Jets systematically worked their way down the field three times in a row. They had three meaningful possessions when the game was still in contest, and they scored a touchdown on a sustained drive every single time in the second half. The offense doing its part, as we've come to expect, and as they had for the two previous games, didn't even score a touchdown in the second half.
Yep.
You can't even score a single damn touchdown in the second half.
Six all season. Six second half touchdowns in nine games. It's unacceptable. It's remarkable in a bad way. It's really bad.
Second quarter, Sean. That's when games are won in the NFL. Got to win it in the second quarter.
I suppose. All right. Somebody is proposing a name for the Texans offensive line that I have to see just how much is Seth looking for more toughness with the offensive line. I want to bounce a name off of Seth. And also we'll hear from C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud was telling us all a week and a half ago to be more positive about the offensive line. What was he saying last night about the protection and the issues up front? We'll talk about that as we head into the 9 o'clock hour coming up next. But first, Texas Star Grill Shop. Get on out to Texas Star Grill Shop this weekend and get ready to grill. Man, the weather is beautiful. November is here. That's the beautiful thing about living in Houston. So many other places. Like, November is here. Time to put our cover on the grill, and we're just going to cook inside the rest of the year. Not here, man. Mother Nature is awesome to us this time of year. So get to Texas Star Grill Shop and upgrade your grill game with the experts there who are going to tell you exactly which of the grills they have there fits your needs. Big Green Egg, gas grills. They've got Weber gas grills. They've got Traeger wood pellet grills. You want an outdoor kitchen with a pizza oven and maybe a stovetop and a griddle and obviously grills to go with that as well. You can do that. They'll design that for you at Texas Star Grill Shop. They're awesome. It's a family-owned business built from the ground up, and they are great at what they do. And the prices on the grills are the best part. The best grills at the best prices are at Texas Star Grill Shop. Find the location nearest you. Used to be just one here at Shepherd and 59. They've got multiple locations scattered all over the Houston area now. TexasStarGrillShop.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.